Metallica, here they come, the kings of metal!
On a bird!
This is Johnny Z, and you're listening to Metal Up Your Podcast.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast. My name is Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frenino.
And as you probably know by now, we are not Clint Wells and Ethan Bluck. We are the hosts of Glass House's A Billy Joel Podcast, and we're stepping in for our buddies here tonight. Clint and Ethan have been so busy on the road with Morgan Wade this spring. They've just been crushing it, sold out dates all around the country with a great band. And they ran into a bit of a jam this weekend. They played two great shows this weekend. They did last night, Saturday, in Dallas at Longhorn Ballroom. And tonight they're playing at the Scoot Inn in Austin. And between the busy schedules, no place to record, and they've got super early flights home tomorrow for a couple days off with the family. So they reached out to us to see if we could step in and cover for them, and we couldn't be happier to do it.
Yeah, super happy to be here. I'm definitely into Metallica, certainly not as big as a fan as the usual host or even Michael, but definitely have listened to him for years and have an appreciation. And we've certainly taken a lot of inspiration from Metal Up Your Podcast for what we do. So it's an honor to return the favor in at least some small way and help out for this episode.
Absolutely. We like to think of ourselves as the children of Metal Up Your Podcast. Back in about 5 years ago, when I was talking around with some friends about the idea of launching a podcast, I was already knee deep in the Metal Up Your Podcast family and reached out to Clint and Ethan both about, you know, what it takes to do this and, you know, gear they use and podcast platforms, you name it, all the millions of questions. And they were so kind to reach back out and give me some great ideas, some great pointers. And once I found Jack at the end of 2019, we were off to the races. And I really, it all started with Clint and Ethan because they were so supportive and they continue to be supportive of the podcast. And we are now almost 3.5 years in, a little more than 3 years into the podcast. And it's really them for, you know, to thank for giving us a big shot in the arm and some big inspiration. And although also the way they do the show, the great flow of it and how they jump topic to topic, you never know what's coming next. And that's what I always loved about this podcast. And we really took inspiration from that for ours.
Yeah. So with that in mind, let's get started.
Yeah, there's a lot happening in Metallica world. There's a lot happening in Metallica world lately, and we've got a lot happening. As we all know, the new album, 72 Seasons, is out April 14th. I don't know if you guys out there are collectors like I am, but there's a plethora of formats and colored vinyl you can get it in. We've got black vinyl, yellow splatter, which are fifth member exclusives, the Smoky Black, which is a Metallica store exclusive, Midnight Purple, Indie Retail exclusive, the Target exclusive, which is Red Smoke, and then Never Mellow Yellow, which comes with a lithograph, which is a Walmart exclusive. There's also two cassette versions, a Transparent Yellow, which is the regular version out, and there is a Matte Black, which is a Spotify exclusive, which has sold out as well, and the standard CD. So, you know, artists are getting creative with getting collectors and fans like us to buy multiple copies of a new record. And I'm one of those guys. I've got quite a few coming up on the 14th. So I'm excited for the new record. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, really. There's so much happening. The day before that, April 13th, Metallica is doing a worldwide listening party where they've got 12 videos, one for each song on the new record. They are hosting listening parties at movie theaters around the country. I've got tickets. I'm seeing it in Beaverton, Oregon, rather. with my wife on the 13th, and excited about that. If you guys are interested, check out Metallica.film for theaters in your area. And there's some other Metallica news happening here. There's the fourth single, which we're going to dig into a little bit later, called 72 Seasons, which presumably is the last single before the record comes out. That was released just a couple days back on the 30th. And there's a brand new book announced as well from James Hetfield, which Jack is going to talk a little bit about.
Right. So James is releasing the Messengers, the Guitars of James Hetfield. It's a coffee shop book now available for pre-order. And it says, for the first time ever, James is opening up the vault and sharing his personal collection of guitars in his new book, out on October 17th and available for pre-order now. This 400-page coffee table book is filled with stunning photos and stories of the significance behind the instruments. Let's see. So standard hardcover edition is available for pre-order at $80. The other pre-orders are the signed slipcover edition. They're numbered. Only 1,500 copies are available. Those go for $150. Or you can get the deluxe box edition, signed numbers, with only 250 copies available at $750. And once again, it's called Messengers, the Guitars of James Hetfield. And, you know, that's really exciting, you know, not only for, I guess, gearheads, but also, you know, if you haven't like really seen some really high quality print photographs in a while and you're getting into the nicks and the scratches and everything that, you know, on his personal guitars, that's got to be really great to see up close and really treasure like that. And to get the stories that go with them. That sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun for guitar players and just anybody into the band.
Yeah. And there have been some great books and some not so great books on Metallica over the years, but this one absolutely makes sense. James has some of the most legendary guitars in rock and roll. And, you know, I know here in the Metal Up Your Podcast community, everyone's got their favorite eras, whether they be the Black Explorers, the Eat Fuck Explorers from the 80s, the old Flying V's and the Snake Bites of today. There's just so many classic iterations of the guitars James has played over the years. So to see actually some really incredible photographs along with stories and history behind the guitars, you know, Jack and I are both drummers by vocation rather. And it's something that I'm excited to dig into, to see and check out for sure.
Yeah. Now, is he the kind of guy that collects other guitars, or does he have, you know, a lot of his own modified ones, things like that?
Yeah. Not quite as much as Kirk Hammett does. Kirk is definitely the guitar collector more than James, I would say. But James has certainly, I don't think they're a band that really gets rid of their guitars too much, you know? <Yeah. laughs> So, you know, from the original Flying V before, you know, when they were touring Kill 'Em All, that has scratch marks of the bullet belts that James used to wear on the back of the body, you know, all the way to the brand new prototypes that they're working on right now from ESP. Assuming they're always working on something new, you know, they've got warehouses full of gear and they're actively used. I know I've seen studio footage, you know, over the years, and you'll see some of these classic guitars hanging back behind them. So they're not just for show and just for keepsakes. They still love and use all these guitars throughout the years. Even Kirk Hammett's, the infamous Greenie that Peter Green from Fleetwood Mac owned, that Kirk has since purchased, that live carries it with them everywhere. So these guys love their guitars and they've still put them to work all these years later.
Right. That explains how this is a 400 page book, certainly then.
Yeah.
Sounds like there's a lot to dig into here for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And it's worth noting that the both signed options sold out very quick when this was announced. Yep. Even by the time I saw the email come across my inbox, I went to the Metallica store to check it out, and they were long gone. But the standard edition is still available everywhere. I pre-ordered it on Amazon, but you can get it there. Any bookstore probably has it available for pre-order, or you can go to Metallica.com and pick it up there as well. We also have new Patreon. We want to give Justine Jackson a shout out, brand new Patreon member. I've been a long member of the Patreon community. It's just a little something, you know, a little cup of coffee goes, you know, just think of it that way. You're buying the guys a cup of coffee and helping them, keeping the lights on. As Jack and I can attest, it takes a lot to keep a podcast running between, you know, between website hosting, podcast hosting, you know, the software we use to record, the microphones we're talking into right now. There's a lot that goes into it. So just throwing a little change every month their way goes a long way just to help them continue to do what they do. It's the least I could do as a token of my thanks, and I urge you to go check that out as well.
Yeah, it's amazing the high quality media we can get now with guys like Clint and Ethan, and you know, hopefully us as well, where we can do this all out of our house and bring you these amazing deep dives into the music that we all love, you know, in a way you can never really get on any sort of behind the music or anything else like that. And it does come with a price. It's a small price, but it's there. And yeah, speaking from our perspective, it always means a lot, you know, when anybody can come through with just a little something to help us out. And also, you know, it's a sign of encouragement. It's a sign that the untold hours you're putting into this project are appreciated by people out there.
Absolutely. And another way you can connect with the guys too, they're over on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. You can find the podcast on Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, which is my preferred platform, but they're all over the place. And you can also reach out anytime at metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. I've been a longtime emailer over the years, and while they aren't able to always get to everything on the air, they do their best to read and respond to every email they get. I know their batting average is a lot better than us. I'm looking at about 7 or 8 messages in our podcast inbox that we are a little behind on. But I tell you, from our experience as well, too, it means the world to hear feedback and to hear what you guys are connecting to from every episode. And so reach out to these guys, and they love to hear your stories and love to hear your thoughts.
Right. You can find them on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. They're also on YouTube, Spotify, and Amazon Music for the episodes. And you can email them directly at metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com.
Absolutely.
And I guess it seems like this is a good time to give ourselves that quick plug before we jump right back into Metallica.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about contact information and the like. So we are Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. And you can find us at, oh, shoot, what is our website? I'm used to doing the email.
Right. So, yeah, our website is glasshousespod.com. And Jack and I are also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you search Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. And like I said earlier, we take a bit of a play out of their playbook in our approach. We do a lot of deep dives as well. We'll go a deep dive on a record, like we just covered his Turnstiles album. We'll do an entire episode on a classic bootleg show. We'll talk about band members, a year in the life, so to speak. We find as well that when we kind of do little buckets like that, there's just a wealth of things you can do to really get a lot of interesting content. We will find that episodes will kick off other ideas as well. So it's a lot of fun. And, you know, Jack has been my right hand man ever since I had this idea. I knew I had to find the right partner. When I heard Clint and Ethan on Metal Up Your Podcast here in the early days, I'm like, wow, they've got such a great chemistry. And learning the story about, wow, these guys are fairly new friends, yet they feel like they've known each other for years. I was like, that's the magic sauce right there. Yeah. And I tell you what, Jack and I had our first conversation New Year's Eve 19. No, not that long ago.
It was a 19.
See, the pandemic has worn off every concept of time for me.
But it's all pre and post.
Right. So it was the end of 2019 was our very first conversation. And I don't know about you, man, but I felt like I had a friend for years after 20 minutes.
Yeah, that was a real easygoing conversation. One of those where you look down at your phone, you realize you've been talking for an hour and 15 minutes, and it feels like 10. So it's been a lot of fun. And we finally got to meet up a few times over the past, I guess, eight or nine months now.
Yeah.
A couple of years into doing this. And it's been a great time. I think we've seen each other in person 3 times. And, you know, it's always been a good time. We've met for shows. We've picked them up from the airport. I came out his way. We went record shopping. It's worked out really well. I have to say it's great having another great friend, albeit across the country, and someone to collaborate with this smoothly. And just one more note on the on our episodes as well. We've had the opportunity to interview a lot of people involved with Billy Joel. That's current and former musicians and collaborators, people in his crew, and people that have been involved with making the records. And the reason I always point those out is, even if you're not a big Billy Joel fan, I would suggest, if you're into the music industry, at least check out those interviews, because the amount of stories and interesting insights into the recording process and the artistic process and the creative process that we get is certainly, you know, universal, well past Billy Joel. And, you know, I've gotten some feedback from friends of mine and other listeners that have said, you know, I'm not a big Billy Joel fan, but that episode was great. Like, I learned a lot just listening to this guy tell stories about, you know, what it was like recording albums in the 80s or something like that. So definitely check it out for that reason. And if I may give one last plug before we get back into all things Metallica, I swear I'm not as crazy a Billy Joel fan as this makes me sound, but I do also have a Billy Joel tribute band that plays in the Philadelphia and Delaware area. We're called Angry Young Band, the Billy Joel Tribute. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram and on YouTube. But the reason I want to make a point of this is we're doing something really big and really cool and really new next month in May. We're launching Billy Joel Weekend at the Grand Opera House in Wilmington. It's going to take place Friday, May 19th and Saturday, May 20th. So if you're in the Delaware Valley area, definitely come check this out. Night one is in the 300 seat room, 300 or so seats, and we're doing all deep cuts and concert favorites. So it's anything that was not released as a single, which includes a lot of songs you know that just never made it to a 45, and some deep ones there. Night two, we're in the big room. I think it's around 1,200 seats, and we're going to be doing, you know, the greatest hits, all the big songs, everything you know and love. But the big thing is we're going to be accompanied by a string section and a horn section on both nights. So it's going to be our usual Spitfire 7-8-piece band, you know, rocking through it like we're at CW Post or the Bottom Line as best we can, and you know, accompanied by acoustic horns, acoustic strings, you know, the real thing, the real musicians pushing that air out in the room with you, and it's going to be a lot of fun. If you're interested, please check out thegrandwilmington.org. You can check us out, Angry Young Band, the Billy Joel Tribute.
Yeah, man, I it's a bucket list. Now that we've seen a Billy show together, I gotta see you play one of these days. So we definitely have to make that happen.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to make another quick mention too of vinyl releases. We were talking about the new 72 Seasons album coming out, but if you want to dip into something cool and unique with Billy Joel, Record Store Day is about a week after, and they are releasing a really cool release from a concert in 1975 in San Francisco at the Great American Music Hall on double vinyl, and it's limited to 6,700 copies. It's such a really interesting recording of Billy and his then band kind of in no man's land, so to speak, where they don't know what's next. He is starting to work on writing material for his Turnstiles album, but he has no idea who the band's going to be, who's going to work on the record. It's all a big question mark, but the band is just playing their butts off. And this came out in a box set about a year and a half ago, but it's finally getting this really cool standalone release on Record Store Day. So if you want to dip into something really unique and limited in the Billy Joel world, I would definitely keep an eye out for that guy. And we're also actually talking all about this release ahead of time. Our episode that's coming out Tuesday, April 11th, we are talking all about this Great American Music Hall show. And we have another great guest on, which is this guy, John Jackson, who is Billy Joel's archivist. So this is another one of those interviews where, you know, even if you're not that hip to Billy, but you want to learn a little bit more out of, you know, another pivotal role in the music business, hearing the story of an archivist and what he does and how that relates to this product coming out. Another fantastic, fascinating talk just as a fan. So I think you guys will dig this one as well.
Yeah. And, you know, as we're saying this, I think there's a lot of overlap between Billy Joel and Metallica fans. I think as both bands or as both acts, you know, mature, we'll say, like fine wine or age like fine wine. I know I got into both Metallica and Billy Joel from my cousins who, you know, were first into Billy and then got into metal and then hooked me up with Metallica. And, you know, the more people I talk to, the more people have both those albums. I always make the joke that there was this cover band out on Long Island for a little while called For Whom the Bell Jolls. And the conceit was they did all Billy Joel songs in the style of Metallica. And they had some of the greatest t-shirts, I have to say, even if they're woefully undocumented digitally. Uh-huh. And of course, yeah, I mean, Michael is a prime example. And refresh our memory, Michael, you went last year to Las Vegas to see both Billy Joel and Metallica on the same weekend. What sort of, did you key into any overlap in the audience there? I know obviously you couldn't take stock of thousands of people, but what,
right,
did you get an impression?
Yeah. Funny enough, and I actually spoke about this a little bit. I was on a Metal Tales episode, shortly after this show, February last year. And it was really fascinating because of how this was billed as like two icons, one weekend, Billy and Metallica back to back. I really saw a really interesting pollination of the audiences, you know, where, hey, you know, I think Metallica was on the first night. Billy was the second night. I'm not 100% sure. I believe that to be the case. But you had a lot of people who were like, oh yeah, you know, coming in town for the Metallica show, but you know, Billy's got some classics, so I might as well check it out. And the venue they played in Vegas, the Allegiant Stadium, is so big that it allowed for more casual fans to get up some tickets who weren't, you know, the diehards who were going to sell out an arena show in 20 minutes. So I really found that there was a lot of fans between the two nights who were coming out of curiosity, but walking away with a respect and appreciation for both Billy and Metallica. I think it really went a long way to open some eyes and ears and hearts to both audiences and both catalogs, because, you know, on paper, it doesn't make sense to pair these up on a weekend. But, you know, most people aren't pigeonholed when it comes to music. A lot of us love classical. We love some hip hop. We love metal. We love singer-songwriters. And, you know, historically, Europe and other countries were better about doing festivals and things like that with, you know, I remember there was one in 85. It was Metallica and Phil Collins. I would love that. But
yeah, yeah.
You wouldn't get that here in America. You would get the metal festivals. You would get the alternative festivals, you know, this and that and the other. So to see these two juxtaposed next to each other, it was great. And the audiences responded in kind, I think.
Well, you know, as we're talking about this, I think what both acts have in common is that real blue collar workmanship, a workmanlike approach to complex music. I remember seeing a Metallica tribute years ago, and I was like, you know, I always loved Metallica, man. Now I get it, dude. These guys are like the woodshop of metal, man. Like they, you know, each riff is just like this little coffee cigarette, that little ashtray you made in eighth grade. You know what I mean? Where you really put the work into it. You got those grooves just right, and it's just one right after the other. Their songs, and Michael kind of confirmed that for me. Obviously, years later, you talked about how like they sort of bolt on the riffs. They have these collections of riffs and they bolt them together. I'm like, yeah, I'm really keying into that. You know, they're not like Yes, where they're like, well, this is going to be a rondo and it has to follow this formula, and the formula is pleasing, but you know, it's a formula. And Metallica just takes these left turns into like, you know, these different areas, and they're all great riffs. And then when you get to Billy Joel, you know, he uses like what they call the trunk method, where like he's just got all these different melodic ideas and chord progressions and song ideas. And and if you start digging into it, you'll find that pieces of a song that came out in 1993 or 90, what was River Dreams?
93.
This is what happens when you can't edit. 93, thank you. Come out in 93. You'll find the demo for that in like 1982, 83, and it's connected to like Uptown Girl. You know, that was the original bridge to Uptown Girl or vice versa. So I think listening to it with those ears, you really feel that same sort of like blue collar, man, let's build something. Let's just apply the craft to it. And what comes out is going to be really cool.
Yeah. And I always felt like Billy and Metallica were the working class. I know, you know, we've talked on our podcast how Springsteen is often billed as the working man's singer songwriter of that generation. But I don't know about you, but I often had a hard time identifying with him. Billy felt like somebody I would know.
I identified with Springsteen, but not from that relatable sort of working class way. He gets me with his with more of his outsider kind of lyrics and, you know,
certainly
down in the ruts kind of stuff. Billy's the guy that clocks in and out somehow, which ironic, and none of these guys, you know, work 40-hour work weeks, but you know, it's that, you know, innate ability of an artist to tap into it. You know, and even Metallica doesn't sing about these things in the same way, but certainly, you know, so much of their audience, especially coming up, was blue collar.
Right.
Did have that mentality. And I really think that that's what people really tapped into in a way, in a primordial sort of way.
And I know and I know with Metallica back then, you know, their fans always loved that, like, wow, they don't even have stage clothes. Like, you'll be hanging with them earlier in the day. They're wearing their denim and their Misfits t-shirt. And that's the same thing you're going to see them wearing on stage. It's like, there was no mess representation. Like, the band you saw on the stage were the same guys that you were partying with that night. they were just one of the fans, one of the guys.
Yeah.
And they were super relatable in that way. And I know as the success comes, it's really difficult to maintain that. And, you know, when you've got, you know, the Metallica camp where they've got their big HQ, where they've got a staff, they've got so many people working on this corporation full time. And Billy does as well. It's really difficult to maintain that connection with the fans. But I think both Billy and Metallica have done a brilliant job of doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, the more time goes on, the less distinction you see between these genres. You know, 100, 200 years from now, it's all going to be mid to late 20th century rock and roll. And you're going to see these things put together and probably drawn the demarcation lines in that way. So do you want to jump right to email or do you want to segue from here into the song? Because I feel like that works. What do you think?
Yeah. You know, actually, why don't we do some emails first and kind of get to the song after that? I think it'd be good to read some of these listener emails. How does that sound?
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's go back. So let's go back into full on Metallica with some emails coming in to Ethan and Clint. First one comes from Joe Happy. He writes, "Good day, fellas. Which member is the biggest contributor to the band and their success? Is it Lars with the drums and song arrangement, or is it James with the lyrics and riffs? Kirk brings riffs, but no lyrics, thank God. So that eliminates him. And Rob joined the band after they were already the biggest band in the world. Keep up the good work on the podcast and on the road. I've been seeing videos of the Morgan Wade shows on YouTube, and you guys are awesome."
Joe, thanks for reaching out, man. Yeah, it's my take on that is you really can't have one without the other. You can't separate James and Lars. They no doubt are the two creative forces behind Metallica, and they're the secret sauce. It doesn't work without one of them. I know back in the 80s, there was talk of replacing James as a singer, even firing Lars at one point, but the magic is the two of them together. So I don't think you could discount either one of them saying that, you know, someone is more important than the other. James has these iconic melodies, these iconic riffs, but Lars is often the guy that shapes them into the songs that we love. So he takes them across the finish line and really makes them sing and gets it all together. So I really think the dynamic between the two of them is just the essential pairing that this band needs. I could never say one's more important than the other for sure.
Yeah, it sounds like the whole is more than the sum of its parts kind of thing there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Kirk and Robert are the perfect supporting cast. They come alive when they're needed, but you know, they know who drives the ship. And, you know, as a guy who's been in bands a lot over the years, if you've got, you know, too many head chefs in the kitchen, there's going to be a lot of conflict.
And let's just talk about the fact that Metallica has gone on this long with two head chefs. I mean, you know, some kind of monster aside, this is a really crazy run to go this long.
Yeah. The fact that they've survived 40 years is an absolute miracle, because this is not the typical scenario.
Right. Not by a long shot.
And real quick too, I want to talk about the Morgan Wade shows. Yeah, Morgan is an incredible live. I know you guys here are hip to Morgan through Clint and Ethan, but I've seen them before about a year ago, and she has incredible songs, great performer, beautiful voice. So please go see Morgan Wade and see the boys with her if you ever get a chance. I'm actually really bummed because they invited me out to see them in Portland a few weeks ago. But as life has it, or as Jack and I call it, the drama llama decided to make an appearance in my life on that day. And the wheels just kind of fell off, and I wasn't able to make the ride down. But it's a show not to miss. I'm constantly kicking myself for missing the show. So, and her shows are selling out so fast. So if you want to, you know, see Morgan live, now's your chance. And I have a feeling that the venues are going to continue to get bigger because she's on an incredible trajectory, and justifiably so. So great.
Yeah, you were saying to me a couple of weeks ago that there's been a big jump in sort of ticket sales and venues over the last, tour or two.
Yeah, absolutely. I know with Morgan, you know, she was playing smaller clubs, headlining with another support, you know, very small clubs. Then she leveled up to another size of venue as direct support for somebody else. And on this tour this year, they've been playing, you know, they played two nights at the Ryman in Nashville. They've been playing, you know, pretty good size cap venues. And in some of them, they sold out so quick that they moved them up to bigger venues. So that's kind of how this tour has been going. And as someone who knows, you know, what a struggle it can be on the road, to know that you're playing in front of great audiences who are there to see you is it goes a long way. So it's so exciting to see them playing these packed houses every night.
Yeah, very cool. All right. Next email is from Chuck Stoll. He writes, "Hey gents, I'm so thankful for you both. I, as you know, love you both. This next email comes from Chuck Stoll. He writes, "Hey gents, I'm so thankful for you both. I, as you know, love you both. You both are two humans I would save in the apocalypse / carry up the beanstalk. You guys saved me in my darkest days, and for that, I give you the ultimate bow, not bowel movement. Thank you. Clint, you were recently talking about how Het could still be writing lyrics about dark. I don't know the extent of his trauma, but I live with it every day. The teaser for the new song today speaks to me in so many ways. You may have healed from your past, but some of us heal day by day and maybe never. Sad but true. Hope to see and meet you both soon. # I need that in my life. Love, Chuck from anywhere in New Jersey."
Chuck, thanks for reaching out, man. And I know I can speak with it for Clint and Ethan and say we really appreciate you. And, you know, that's the beauty of music. You know, Metal Up Your Podcast is a music community, really. And the fact that we've got a band like Metallica that can connect us all and just make us all feel like a part of a belonging, it really goes a long way. And I'm so grateful for them as well, and for this podcast and for this band. We urge you to just, you know, keep working through it. You know, James is a prime example. He writes, you know, some incredible touching music. And I'm already seeing some of the stuff here on 72 Seasons where, you know, he writes such beautiful, dark lyrics. And it's incredible that he's got this outlet. And I think your past trauma is something that you don't necessarily ever heal from. You just develop better coping mechanisms to deal with them. So the fact that, you know, James is continuing to create this long into his career is incredible. And I think that can only help him and hopefully help you as well, too. You know, that you can identify with some of the things that he's going through.
Yeah, not knowing much at all about you, Chuck, I have to say I'm glad that you've found things like Metallica's music and Metal Up Your Podcast. And, I love to hear your perspective on it, you know, that, you know, some of us heal day by day and, you know, maybe never, but it's that day by day. I think that that's really important. And I'm glad to see that you have that perspective and that you're making it day by day and you find these things to be excited about and grateful for. And that's really great.
Absolutely. This next email comes from Jeff Olton. He reaches out and says, "Good day, how do, brothers?" Wow, so we have "good day, how do," and "brothers." Okay, so we got a little "Wasting My Hate" and Hulk Hogan. I'm not even going to try to do those impressions, but you know where he's coming from here. Anyway, he says, "Good day, how do, brothers? It's been a while since I last wrote in. The last time I did, I was at around episode 200, and I'm now up to date. It's crazy to think that the days of hearing your wonderful voices 24/7 while at work are over, but I will be tuning in every subsequent Monday, no question. I am not hopping off the ride. At the time of writing this, we wait for the debut of the song 72 Seasons, and I gotta say, I have pretty high hopes for it. Sounds like a spit out the bone type barn burner song. My kind of song. I don't know how to feel with so many singles being released before the album. If it makes any sense, I usually think of a song separately from the entire album if it's released as a single beforehand, and I don't think of the album as cohesively. But either way, new Metallica? Who am I to complain? Cheers, your friend Jeff from Montcalm, New Brunswick, Canada, New Jersey."
Jersey representing on this episode, huh?
Well, that's actually been a long-running gag in the Metal Up Your Podcast camp. So no matter where you're from New Jersey.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll retreat back into the shadows then.
Yeah, Jeff, it's funny. I had a conversation recently with somebody about single structure release. Back in the day, you'd get probably one single about a month or two before a record would come out, and radio would just really work the song, try to develop it and grow it. And these days, they don't really rely on radio much for traction. It's all about streaming. It's all about YouTube. So, and people have such smaller attention spans these days. So they feel like they've got to keep active with content once a record's announced between then and when it comes out. At least that's my take. So here, with example with Metallica, we've got an album out in just under 2 weeks, and we've already heard 4 songs. That would have been unheard of 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes a lot of sense, because once these things are out there, I guess they're out there. Everybody's listening on Spotify, and it's a good way to get a ramp up going.
Yeah.
You know,
And I can identify with you too, you know, in a way, because I'm an albums guy as well. So I love listening to the songs in the context of an album, you know, even when it comes to the big songs like your Fuels, your Unforgivens, your Master of Puppets, all those tracks, they stand out amazingly on their own as classic songs. But I've always loved how an album is sequenced together. So I want to see how Sandman flows into Sad But True and how Fuel flows into Memory Remains and so on and so forth. So while I've been dipping into these songs as they've come out because I don't have the willpower to stay away, I can't wait to pull this out the day it comes out, place the platter on the turntable, and really listen to these 12 songs in one setting. That's what I'm most excited for.
Well, and what did you say? There's four singles out?
There's four singles out so far, right. Correct. Yep.
So I guess there's something for you guys all to consider then is what the listening experience is going to be like, knowing a third of the album and seeing how those songs sort of tentpole the album is, as opposed to hearing like this block of new music with maybe just one thing that you know. I mean, obviously, you know, the big Metallica fans, you guys are all going to listen to this thing backwards and forwards as many times as possible. But I guess, you know, as Metallica gets new, you know, gains new fans with every subsequent generation, you know, you're looking at a generation that may not make it through an entire album in a sitting. So maybe putting out more of those songs so people have points that they understand or they're familiar with as they listen to it may, for the younger listeners or for the new listeners, you know, get them through an entire album more times if they don't wade into complete unrelated water, unknown waters for 30 to 40 minutes at a time.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And in looking here at the schedule of releasing these singles, it's interesting how they did it. The first single, Lux Aeterna, pretty much came with the album announcement. And that came out November 28th, 2022. The second single was Screaming Suicide, which was January 19th, 2023. And then we had no single release in February. And we had March 1st with If Darkness Had a Son. And March 30th was the single number four here with 72 Seasons.
Oh, wow. Oh, so yeah, so it's going to feel like the album you already know once it comes out. That's exciting. That's fun. I like that idea.
Yeah, so you're going to have quite a bit of familiarity as well, and you're going to have an idea of the production of it. And so that, you know, a lot of that's going to be familiar, but you're still now going to have eight new songs to digest. And like you said, the experience of seeing how these fit in with those other eight.
Yeah. Next one comes from Sanwal Abbas. Hiya, Clinton, Ethan. Well, I'm very mixed on If Darkness Had a Son. It sounds overly familiar, if you ask me. It's like they were making a soup of ideas and sprinkled a bit of Eye of the Beholder, Broken Beat, and Scarred, and into the intro to Hardwired with a seasoning of the Presido sessions. The Temptation part caught me a little off guard. I highly believe it's an idea from the Presido days. Am I saying that right?
It's Presidio.
Presidio. Okay. Maybe you should read this one, but we're already into it. I highly believe it's an idea from the Presidio days they decided to resurrect. Also, another thing I'm finding disappointing is how the songs we've heard sound pretty much like Hardwired. Don't get me wrong, it's a good album, but I like Metallica albums being sonically different. Like how there's a difference between Kill and Ride, Master and Justice, Load, Reload, I can understand why they sound alike, because those songs were recorded at the same time. But 72 Seasons is 7 years since Hardwired. It should not sound just the same. It's like if Death Magnetic still sounded like Saint Anger. Overall, I'm not jazzed about the song and hoping the album offers better material. Your Shire pal, Samwise.
Yeah, Sam, Samwise, thanks for reaching out. I've heard quite a bit of that where people were hoping for something a little more different sonically, and I definitely do understand that. It does certainly have similarities to the production style of Hardwired. But I dug that record quite a bit, especially the front half. So I'm not sad about it. And, you know, I really just think, you know, it comes to a band who's so confident in their music and in their heart that they're a band who's always going to do what they do. You know, I can understand people want to be like, yeah, I want to hear something that's a little more like Puppets or something that's a little more like this or more like that. But personally, while I may not love every song, every note that comes out on this record, I love the fact that I know that this is exactly the record they wanted to make this year. And that's great. I wouldn't want that any other way.
Do you want to read the next one?
Yeah. This next one is from Aaron Epp, and he writes, "Hey, Clinton, Ethan, Metallica fan since 96 here. I've been re-listening to the band's entire discography in anticipation of 72 Seasons. A few weeks back, I typed Metallica into my podcast app's search feature to see if there were any good podcasts out there about the band. and I came across yours. I started listening from the beginning and quickly fell in love. I'm on episode 34 right now and have dipped into one or two more recent episodes too. In some ways, I feel like I'm in 2017 writing an email to the future. I had to take some time to let you know how much I'm enjoying the podcast. The other night, I was telling my wife, who doesn't like Metallica but enjoys hearing about my interests, about Ethan's infamous Outlaw Torn snafu from one of the earliest episodes. So, Jack, I'll fill you in on that a little bit. So, they were talking about the original S&M album from 1999. And, you know, as you and I have had many times while recording, Ethan had a little brain fart where he just happened to forget that the Outlaw Torn was on it when it is.
Right.
So he mentioned that it was not, and it became a running joke for a little while. So he says, my wife stopped me and says, wait, are you saying the Outlaw Torn or the Outlawed Horn? So now every time the Outlaw Torn comes up on the podcast, I laugh, not only because of Ethan's mistake, but because of what my wife said. I love that song and don't think I'll ever be able to listen to it again without imagining a dystopian future where playing horn instruments is against the law. Anyway, thanks so much for all the work you put into Metal Up Your Podcast. Looking forward to catching up on old episodes and also hearing your ongoing 72 seasons coverage. Take care, Aaron. Winnipeg, Manitoba. Yeah, you know, I love, it's funny, Jack and I'd say, tend to do quite a bit more editing than Clint and Ethan does. At least I know what we edit out of ours. So
yeah.
Jack and I have had plenty of those instances, but we've cut those out most of the time. Right. Sometimes for comedic effect, we'll leave it in and it becomes a fun moment, certainly. But, you know, Jack and I will often talk for 2+ hours and whittle it down to about 1 hour and 5 minutes. That's kind of how we roll when it comes to Billy.
So sorry, whatever we're throwing at you guys to edit in the, in the next 16 hours.
Yeah. But it's, but you know, these guys are fans like we are. So we, you know, we know how it is. And I tell you, when your software is recording, your microphone is in front of your face, sometimes I'll have a litany of notes right in front of me and I will completely gloss over something. I remember listening to a recent episode and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I forgot to mention this. Or I had this sitting in front of me, but I never brought it up. So these are things that certainly happen over time.
Meanwhile, I'm the guy that in school was like, can we have a test where we don't have to remember the dates? Because like, I'm not going to remember any years or any specific time something happened. I'll string together disparate ideas, but like numbers, no.
Well, you and Billy Joel would get along then too, because he can never seem to remember dates.
Oh yeah. He just makes it up as he goes. That's great.
And you can get away with it when you're 73. Now it's exactly. Oh yeah, that's Billy.
He was getting away with it when he was 40. Give me a break.
Exactly. Yeah, who are we kidding?
It's what I aspire to.
Right. So we all go ahead, Jack.
Well, I'm going to suggest, because the next thing we have on the list here as far as emails is listeners' thoughts on 72 seasons. But I have not heard the track yet. Yes. So I think maybe it would be fun if we did the track and then we read these people. So I'm not, you know, biased by anything anybody says here.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good idea. So let's do a little listen through and we'll give some initial thoughts here. Now, I've heard the song a handful of times. I've seen the video. We're going to be playing the album version, so it's a little bit shorter, about a minute or so shorter than the video. Clocks in at roughly 7:39. So why don't we give this a spin here check it out, right?
All right.
All right. Here we go. We got the track queued up. Nope, not Billy Joel today, sir. All right.
He's just confused.
Here we go. All right. Nat, well, it just knows. Right. So let's hit play on the new single, 72 Seasons. Here we go. I dig that bass. Mighty.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh, I like that. I like the that the bass isn't moving.
Yeah.
But the guitar riffs are. Like a little, like kind of Meshuggah-ish.
Right.
There's some classic Metallica hits right there. Adding on top.
Yeah.
Ooh, it keeps going. I like that. I like that still on that bass riff. Ooh.
I wonder if that's Kirk
like that
there.
Drone. Yeah. It builds on the first riffs really nicely.
Yeah.
Ooh. There's that left turn.
There we go.
There's that classic Metallica.
Now, this is something that I'd hear on Justice for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Violation! Violation! That riff would be great live.
Yeah.
Man. Now this sounds like something from Load.
Right.
James sounds great.
Yeah. You know, it's a consequence, I think, of modern recording that it's a lot cleaner. And it's not quite as bleedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but his approach, I think, accommodates that really well. Nice little melodic.
That's catchy.
There. Yeah.
Great transition.
Yeah. Are they recording digital or on tape, do you know?
Digital. Pro Tools.
Yeah. I think that's the only thing I would like to hear is some tape going into the red. Just right. Give that extra crackle, you know? They record live or they usually...
These are typically cobbled together off of many, yeah. many takes.
Okay. I like the structure of the lyrics. It feels pretty yeah. classic metal. You know, it's spitting out like some simple poetry, but
right. They sit really well against that riff.
Yeah.
Big left turn here.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Better Than You a little bit.
Yeah. I like that just those moments of melody, like on
yeah.
perhaps the most insightful or emotional point of the song, you know? It really right. underscores that. Yeah. Do the math on 72 seasons here.
He changed?
12. Oh, yeah, it goes up, yeah. 6 years, okay.
Yeah, he changed.
All right, back to the beginning, yeah. Yeah, the riffs are a little different from the intro.
Ooh.
Ooh. This is nice little breakneck stuff right here.
Sounds like Robert on backing vocals there.
Yeah.
Ooh. Give it to us, Kirk. All right, come here on.
Okay. I love that thing that Metallica does where like it just slips out of time, but buries the one for like a couple measures, you know, and it just
yeah.
it comes back in.
Ooh. There we go.
Yeah. I like that. I like this one.
Yeah. Ooh, guitar-many.
Yeah. Nice breakdown. Oh, I like that. I like that entrance to the third verse there.
Yeah.
That's like a no BS way to do it. Yeah, I like the sort of parallel thing going on here where it's all related, but obviously the A line and the B line are separate. You can read all the B lines, you know.
Right.
It's like it's an idea, and then you can just all but spit out two ways to describe it, and then you can kind of come back and be lucid again.
Yeah.
You know.
And see, going into this section here, this is how you can tell it's like, you know, Lars or maybe James even had the site to be like, oh wow, these can connect.
Yeah.
When if you look at them on their own, it's not totally not obvious, but they were able to marry those two.
Yeah. All right.
Wow.
I'm digging it. A lot of craft there. A lot of judicious use of variations on the riffs, especially the intro.
Yeah.
That's cool. I'm really, you know, I'm probably speaking out of school because I haven't sat down with Metallica in a long time or really, you know, looked at old thrash lyrics closely. But just I really love the way those verses work where you just get that feeling like, you know, if you're talking about someone that's dealing with trauma or something like that, that idea of like, you know, they can. I don't know, I'm talking about schooling, but I like that idea. Like he's putting out like a full thought and then these sort of almost barbaric sputters of ideas and then collecting himself again and putting out a full thought in these sputters. And it sort of seems to me to speak to some sort of mindset right there. You know, that just holding on sort of thing where sometimes you have a grip on it and sometimes it's bigger than you can describe. And it keeps vacillating like that, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's a great description of that approach to the vocal. And, you know, again, 72 seasons essentially means your first 18 years. So if you look at it in that context, that's, you know, it's dealing with, with your childhood as an adult.
Mm. Now I have to go back and read them again. I, like an idiot, I did 72 into 12 thinking this was 6 years. But yeah, you're right. The seasons. The quarters, seasons. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Log on Dogmatic. Yeah, Long Dogmatic is Over the Die is cast.
Yeah, let me read through these lyrics real quick. There's some interesting stuff here. Beating on the wrath of man, shot down, traumatic, time haunted by the past, long gone, dogmatic, although the die is cast. Shot down, volcanic, but what's done is done and done. Look back, psychotic, no chance before this life began.
Well, it's what is gone is gone. And done.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And then staring into black light, dominating birthright. And then the chorus, wrath of man, leeching through, split into, wrath of man, crash into, point of view. Wrath of man, violence, inheritance. Wrath of man, thrive upon, feeding on, 72 seasons gone. Feeding on the wrath of man, shoot back, erratic. Mad seasons take their toll. New mask, chaotic. Completely lost control. Shoot back, fanatic. Weather under looming shadow cast. I'm sorry, wither under looming shadow cast. Slip back, narcotic. Blinded by the ashes of the past. Staring into black light. Choking on the stage fright. Wrath of man. Leeching through, split in two. Wrath of man. Crashing into, point of view. Wrath of man. Violence, inheritance, wrath of man, thrive upon, feeding on, 72 seasons gone, piercing through, cut into, polarize, point of view, crash into, paralyze, feeding on the wrath of man, man down, barbaric, quick fire machine gun thoughts, deep seed, stigmatic, some have and some have not, man down, demonic, No Mercy from the Ghost Within, Turn Back, Hypnotic, There's Breathing Out, But Not Back In, Staring Into Black Light, Permanently Midnight, Wrath of Man, Leeching Through, Split In Two, Wrath of Man, Crash Into, Point of View, Wrath of Man, Violence, Inheritance, Wrath of Man, Thief Upon, Feeding On, 72 Seasons Gone, Feeding on the Wrath of Man.
So, yeah, I think what makes this dark isn't just the obvious surface layer of the lyrics, but it doesn't give you any way out. It doesn't give you any resolution. You know, at best, he starts the cycle again, because at the beginning, it's all the setup. You know what I mean? It's showing you what he's, you know, the sort of the baggage he's bringing to whatever is about to happen, right? You know, long gone, dogmatic. Like, that's a great line. Just, you know, it's in the past, but it's still certainly informing everything that's going on right now.
Right.
And, you know, Look Back Psychotic is like, gives you an idea of his perspective. Like, he knows this is going on, but obviously there's plenty more songs, so there's not too much he can do about it. But maybe you hope he can. Second verse seems to be, you know, the action, whatever interaction he's having at the time, you know, because you have Shoot Back, Put On a New Mask, Slip Back, you know, all these things. And then the third one, you hope that maybe comes out of it somehow, right? You hope that, like, the bridge brings insight, and then, you know, by the third verse, he's going to get out of it. But it's not. And what's interesting is it becomes interior again, very much interior. And, it, you know, till it becomes Turned Back, Hypnotic, There's Breathing Out, But Not Back In. And I can't make perfect sense out of the last line, but it just seems like he comes to a situation with this baggage. He takes an aggressive approach to it because of said baggage.
Right.
He then retreats back into his baggage. You know what I mean? And his cycle's just going to go on and on again every time. Like, he's going to get up to this situation. He's going to fight rather than maybe take a different approach.
Yeah.
And he's going, you know, staring into backlight, permanently midnight. I like leeching through, split in two. I like that idea of, like, there's two of you. Like, there's your past and your present.
Right.
But it leeches through, like, you know, even that you, as much as you're trying to separate these two things, one just keeps leaking into the other. I like when he uses stigmatic and narcotic, because they're not necessarily the proper word grammatically to use, but he loads them up so well that they have so much more meaning by not using a longer phrase or a different word, you know, just like throwing the word narcotic. It's like, yeah, now you understand what he means in this sense.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's worth noting the spelling early on too, in the line, although the die is cast.
Yeah. It's D-I-E instead of Y-E.
Yeah. So, you know, either, you know, there's obviously the word die, like you die, but also like a die, like the singular of dice, one. So there's a few layers to just this one little line.
Right, right. Shot down volcanic. I think that speaks to what he does in the second verse, shot down, but rises up in a destructive way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, you know, not having too much time to look through this, the juxtapositions there, I think, are going to be really interesting. Shot down, traumatic, then long god, nogmatic, just to see how those progress or repeat or vary as the song goes on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, just hearing it now, I can't get too far into it.
Yeah.
But I might spend some time with this later.
Yeah.
Come up with some more ideas.
Yeah, certainly. But yeah, good insight out of the gate here. And musically, I'm really digging it. When Death Magnetic came out in 2008, you know, there's a lot to be said about the production, which I'm not a fan of. But one thing that Rick Rubin was hailed for was he got Metallica to say, you know, don't be afraid of your past musically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your thrash roots, your Kill 'Em All, your Justice for All, those, you know, Metallica's always been a band to make left turns and do something different. Rick said, it's okay to embrace what you've done before and channel it through who you are now.
Right.
And the Death Magnetic record had a very much more progressive, thrashy record.
Uh-huh.
And with Hardwired in 2016, it was starting to become Metallica embracing everything, because once they started going back to, like, embracing the thrash roots, suddenly it was Saint Anger, the Load records, all of that got pushed out to the side. And it was like, mm-hmm. embrace a certain part of your past. You know, like, but I'm noticing there and here again on the 72 Seasons songs, and this track in particular, that there's elements throughout their career musically. It very much sounds like Metallica now, but I'll hear moments that, wow, in a, you know, I could hear something like this on Injustice for All or Master of Puppets, And I can definitely hear a melody here on and a groove like on Load. So to me, Metallica is kind of now embracing their entire catalog. They're not afraid to go back to the Load well, so to speak. And really, you know, they're being influenced by themselves now in a way.
Right.
And I really find that interesting.
Yeah. I'd love to go back to Ride the Lightning and Master of Puppets and compare not only the lyrics, but also the riffs and the construction of the riffs and the arrangements of said riffs and see how that's changed. Like I said, I haven't listened to anything in a long time from Metallica or any of the new stuff, but my instinct is that the use of modifying the riffs throughout the song as they did with that intro is something a little different. I don't know if that's you more experienced listeners might have caught this happening more and more or know that it has happened, but that's the one thing that jumped out on me was how they were using variations on it throughout.
Yeah. And it's something you see often in classical music and in, you know, even in Broadway where it's like variations on a theme.
Yeah.
Where, you know, a theme is established and then you'll hear, you know, different embellishments and different variations on it throughout the song to help tell a story.
Yeah. And, you know, I was asking about, you know, how they are they playing these live or and you said they, you know, it's more assembling them from takes. You know, that can lead to a lot of copy and paste. But going into that third verse, how it's just got this random different intro,
right.
You know, speaks to really thinking this thing all the way through that they're not just either mentally or actually control C, control V-ing through throughout the program to put these riffs together.
Yeah.
They were like, no, we're going to do this a little different going into the third verse.
Right.
I think that was the big example of that, which was really cool, which is just when you think like, okay, we're going to go through a whole, oh, no, wait, here we are. You know,
left turn, here we
better
go.
Better keep listening. Yeah.
Hold on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the Metallica record that was most victim to the cut and paste method was Saint Anger. And, you know, James was in a really rough place, more so than most times in their career, I would say, as is evident in Some Kind of Monster. But
yeah,
it was them really trying to take these nuggets of ideas and make songs out of them in a non, like, this was the one record where they didn't do it the Metallica way. And,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of, oh, this is kind of a cool riff idea. Let's copy and paste it 12 times.
Right.
And then we'll slide this section over here. Mm-hmm. And so it was a lot more assembled in Pro Tools, I feel like, on that record than anything now. I feel like even though it's not played live, the song is figured out and at least James and Lars are learning it as a full piece, whether instead of just playing a section, assembling it.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about on Saint Anger?
No, I on this record, I feel like
they're more so,
you know, while they're still, you know, assembling the riffs to create, to build the song, the finished product is a song before they is mostly getting further in place before the recording than Saint Anger was.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about this recently in some other iterations, but it's so hard to draw that line between being methodical and intriguing in that sort of mathematical sense. Like, let's follow this formula. What happens if you do this riff this many times and then this, and then you do this, or you modulate in these ways, and you could come up with something inventive, but you could really lose the spirit of it very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And to really strike that balance between, you know, we're going to string these riffs together, but we're going to find interesting ways to do it. And doing that outside the organic activity of playing it live in a room. Yeah, that's a really unique balance for a band to strike, to be able to get the best of both worlds and put that into a song like this. And, you know, I mean, as far as cut and pacing on Saint Anger, you know, I would, you know, hazard to say that'd be pretty expected in 02, 03 because Pro Tools was still relatively new. And it's like, well, yeah, obviously a band like this is going to be like, dude, how much time are we going to save? How much more time do we have to like come up with like better riffs and shit? If we don't have to play it 12 times, like let's just loop them and we could put stuff on top. Like, why not? You know,
right.
Just thinking about the time back then, it's like,
this
was a newfangled technology, relatively speaking.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, I don't fault it at all because at that time, it's really like, this was like new technology. And I would absolutely expect that to embrace and be like, what can we do with this? And can this work for us?
Yeah.
And you know, absolutely, you know, try, you know, it's amazing how between those times, you know, between Kill 'Em All and Saint Anger, especially how the technology changed more and more and right. more by the Load Records. You had digital introduced in a much more primitive way. I remember reading stories from engineers where it would just take them so long to render these transitions and just to like all these things that we take for granted, like, wow, you know, I just got done editing a 2.5 hour podcast and it took me 37 minutes or 37 seconds to mix it down.
Yeah.
When that would take, you know, days back then.
I've talked on our podcast about, you know, when I was doing film in the early 2000s, 99, I started, and we didn't use film at that point. We were transitioning to digital, and what a god awful experience it was, just how long it took to render a 5 minute video that you made. If God forbid you use a crossfade, like a digital crossfade, you would be praying to every god under the sun that this damn thing would not freeze up, and it would, and you'd lose your stuff, you know. And then 6-7 years later, my daughter would pick up my phone and be like, I'm gonna make a movie, and she's cutting, and she's using, like, you know, kindergarten first, because she's cutting and doing all these things. I'm like, that would have taken me hours.
Oh my gosh. You know, yeah. It's funny, that just gave me flashbacks to my time working the auto show circuit. I was in New York, which probably would have been like 2014, shooting a lot of video on my phone, because we were doing a lot of things that required just that kind of situation. Mm-hmm. But even then, the process of getting the video from a phone to a computer was a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
I spent hours just transferring music between an iPhone and a Mac, mind you.
Yeah.
There was no AirDrop back then where I could send a 5 minute video to my MacBook in 8 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that technology. It's like every time I get really frustrated with my phone or my, you know, Adobe Premiere here and Adobe Audition, I'm like, yeah, you know, this isn't bad.
Yeah. Go back to your giant monitor and desktop and see how you feel then.
Yeah. If it'll boot up. But, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Well, all right. So we've gone well off the beaten path, as we often do.
This is Tangent City here in Metal Up Your Podcast world.
Right.
One thing I want to comment on, though, too, on this song. So this one's written by James Hetfield, Lars Ulrich, as expected, but also Kirk Hammett gets a writing credit.
Hmm.
And I wanted to speak to Kirk's solo here. There's been some talk and some feeling on and off over the years that Kirk's solos have been a little less inspired, a little less thought out. It's just been kind of like improvised in the moment. While it's certainly serviceable, they're not some of his more memorable solos. I'll say it that way. Listening to this solo and the journey it goes on, to me, was one of the more memorable Kirk solos I've heard in a little bit. Really, yeah. Well done.
Cool.
And go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I can't speak to that, but it was in comparison. But yeah, it had some nice structured parts in there for sure.
Yeah.
Had some nice playing with the rhythm, had some nice breaks in it.
Yep. So with that said, you want to dip it? We actually have some listener thoughts, yes, on the new track. Thoughts.
Yeah. Let's see how we lined up. All right. Ferox, Ferox underscore 1982. Right. Sick tune. Love the riffing. The breakdown after the second chorus sounds like Black Magic by Slayer. Heavy lyrics too. Love it. Linda Thomas, this is one hell of a track. So much to unpack in that song. Looking forward to the episode. Telepow writes, the best song so far. The video is cool, but it's kind of the same vibe as the others. And Elliot Coronios writes, absolutely loving it, from the instrumentals to the lyrics. Not to mention, this is Kirk's best solo out of the four singles. We don't need Metallica to reinvent the wheel anymore. They are showing us they're still kicking ass. And more importantly, they're sounding like they're having a great time making music. Derek Drummer, I'm feeling it. They're sounding like they're having a great time making music. And then Derek Drummer writes simply, I'm feeling it. So I think we were mostly in line here. Yeah. Elliot mentions that it's Kirk's best solo out of the four singles. Also says, you know, acknowledges Metallica is not reinventing the wheel, but they're still kicking ass doing it. Linda Thomas, so much to unpack in the song. Barox, you know, the mentions the riffing, the breakdown, how heavy the lyrics are too. So
yeah,
it seems like it's hitting the mark here.
Yeah, it really does. And to Elliot's point about, you know, not reinventing the wheel, but, you know, they're still kicking ass and putting out quality music this deep into their career. You guys got to understand, you know, Jack and I host a Billy Joel podcast. The guy has not put out a record since 1993. Yeah. The Metallica boys were touring the Black Album still when Billy Joel put out River of Dreams.
Right.
We gave up hope for new Billy Joel music a long time ago, guys.
And so, if it comes out, I don't want to hear it.
Right. We got All My Life, remember, in like 2008.
Yeah, that was a Frank Sinatra kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Liberty, I remember Liberty DeVito says, if I was still with them, I would have just told them how much it sucked and we would have done something else.
Yeah, it's tough, man. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, you listen to this and it's like so many parts of this song, you're like, yep, that's Metallica, like, yeah, you know, worthy of Webster's, but not in the bad way. You know,
no.
It used to be that Slayer was the only one that was able to pull this off, right? Slayer was the only one that was just like, no, damn it, we're Slayer. We're doing the same thing every album and you're going to like it. And people did. And, you know, that was going into the 90s where, you know, Anthrax changed it up. Metallica changed it up.
Megadeth did.
Megadeth, yeah. And, you know, Metallica came back out of that. And as you've said, you know, they're comfortable being Metallica. And they're able to do it, I think, without sounding rehashed, really.
Right.
It's them. It's like Chuck Berry doing a double stop. It's like, yeah, you've heard it a million times, but you're hearing the guy do it. You know, the guy that right. pioneered the double stop is doing it. Same thing with Metallica.
Yeah. It's like, well, yeah, of course this can remind me a little bit of Load or a little bit of Blackened. It's like, well, yeah, this is the guy who wrote those songs. So right. it's in the DNA is there. It's just, it's in that guy's soul. So it's, you know, I can't expect these guys to come up with something a million times unique and completely unrecognizable every time they decide to hit record. It's just, you know, you're gonna write what you're feeling, and if it harkens back to, you know, a hint of something you may have done before, that's okay.
Yeah, well, and you know how much of that is a platform, yeah, because how much of that just becomes a platform for your expression, you know?
Right.
It's you know, what are the lyrics saying here that he hasn't been able to say in other ways before? And you're giving it sort of that pad of what you do best.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly exciting.
Yeah. Well, this was a lot of fun. I got to tell you, I've been fortunate to be on Metal Up Your Podcast a few times. Our pal Angelo Gonzalez and I co-hosted last summer because the boys were up in Europe with Morgan Wade again. And I've been on a couple Metal Tales episodes over the years, and Clint and Ethan have both become really good friends. And, you know, we're always texting about music and life and everything in general. So they're great guys. And the fact that we, you know, we got the call to jump in when they couldn't pull it together this week was an honor, and another olive branch of support that they've given both Jack and myself over the years, because like I said earlier, they're a big reason why we've been able to do what we do at Glass Houses. And it's, you know, it's a lot of fun. And Jack knows I like to sneak in my Metallica references that he judiciously edits out. When I go off just too far,
but
to the right,
just for time, left. Only
yeah,
for time.
Just for time.
I
right?
edit myself yeah. as well. Yeah,
yeah.
I edit out all my Genesis and Jethro right. Tull references.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, it's there. So you know, when I decided I was going to start a Billy Joel podcast, I was like, you know, there's two bands in the world, artists or bands, that I could talk to and talk about at length: Billy Joel, Metallica. And knowing how good Metal Up Your Podcast was, I'm like, yeah, I'm not about to compete with those guys. Not happening. So I'm like, well, nobody is doing a Billy Joel podcast right now. So that was kind of like, yeah, that was the same choice. And but it's still, you know, we as a podcast feel very much a part of the Metal Up Your Podcast family. And it's always a pleasure to step in and let Clint and Ethan have a breather. You know, these guys are touring so aggressively right now. And I know Clint just moved into a brand new home that he's barely even seen because he's been on the road. Mm. And they're, you know, they're flying home early morning after tonight's gig to just have a tiny, tiny little breath and breather with their families. So if we can take one episode off their plate, we're happy to do this anytime.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Guys, I hope to meet you guys either in person or virtually via email soon. Thanks so much for having me on. This has been great. This is, I think I'm going to listen to a ton of metal this week and a ton of Metallica. I'm going to come around to that part of the rotation now. This has really kicked it off. And what fun it was sitting down this closely with a new Metallica song that didn't feel like 7 minutes and 20 seconds going by. Man, that felt like a 3.5 minute single, which is awesome because that means like there's not a wasted note in there. It was really cool sitting down and digging into it moment by moment. That was a lot of fun.
It was. And it's such an exciting time to be in the Metallica camp with this new record, these new songs, the tour coming up this year. And you always wonder what's next as a podcast. And so I feel like Metallica has injected another leg into the podcast here with so much going on. And, you know, Metallica has always been the band that I look to of like the case study of like, yeah, these guys do it right. Everything is so well placed and so strategic that by the time you're like, oh, wow, there's a little bit of a lull. Just kidding. Here's something to wet your whistle in the meantime. Right. You know, it's really fascinating. And it's a super excited to be, you know, super exciting time to be a Metallica fan. And I tell you what, I cannot wait for April 14th. 72 seasons. Here we are, 2023, still getting new Metallica music, and I'm on for the ride all day long.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, this is going to be a fun month for sure.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to it.
And Clint and Ethan are going to be back again next week after they've had a chance to finally sleep and see their wives and Clint's kiddo. And so hope they have a nice couple days. And, yeah, you know, reach out to the boys. And if you got a couple seconds and want to see what we're doing, search Billy Joel, Glass House is a Billy Joel podcast on any of the podcast platforms. And, you know, dip into us. We'd love to have you around as well. And there's room for all of us.
Yeah, come say hi.
All right, guys, we'll see you soon. And Clint and Ethan, thanks again. Peace. See ya.
Thanks a lot.
I would say, delete that.